across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! Good morning. The questions for Sinn Féin continue. As the biggest political party in Northern Ireland, they have a powerful message to send to all of us as to what we should and shouldn't be doing, what we can and can't do around information that we have where there may be someone in a workplace who is suspected of being attracted to children. So the programme will unfold today. We are many programmes into this now, and we're going to continue asking questions until we have clear advice for every single one of us around safeguarding children. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. Pressure is growing on Sinn Féin surrounding whether they ought to have done much more when they found out one of their senior press officers at the time, Michael McMonagall, had been arrested on suspicion of child sex offences. One of those offences was attempting to incite a child under 13 to engage in sexual activity. A former MLA has now publicly accused the party of a serious breach of safeguarding for failing to alert the British Heart Foundation that McMonagall was under police investigation for sexual offences. Karen Mullen is the ex-MLA for Foyle. Last night she tweeted, "Police had enough evidence to take forward to investigate. This was enough for Sinn Féin not to continue to employ him. Safety of children should always come first. The British Heart Foundation should have been alerted immediately. Serious breach of safeguarding." Now, over the last 48 hours, Sinn Féin have repeatedly been asked why they did not red flag what they knew about McMonagall to his future employer. In an interview with the BBC's Enda McClafferty, Conor Murphy from Sinn Féin has suggested and sent a message out to the public that it would have prejudiced a police investigation for Sinn Féin to have alerted a future employer.
When we suspended him and he ended his engagement with us, that matter from then until the point that he was charged was a matter for the police. So we have no involvement. It's not our job to do the investigation. It's not our job to... Yeah. Sorry, just this point. I mean, the question is, you know, what would you do in those circumstances? We are not involved in the investigation. We are not involved in advising anyone in relation to the investigation. That is a matter for the police. Anything to do, anything in relation to that could potentially be prejudicial. It was up to the police to gather sufficient evidence to decide to charge him.
Could be potentially prejudicial. Now, this subject is obviously so important. This is about preventing children being abused. And when we have gone to the PSNI about one of the most important safeguarding issues that any of us will care about, children, when we have gone to the police and said, would it interfere with your police investigation if any employer told a future employer that we have knowledge that that person is being investigated? And the police clearly don't want to get involved in a story around Sinn Féin in the context of what we're talking about. So I would say to the safeguarding team within the PSNI this morning, are you sure you don't want to advise us, the community? Are you sure you don't want to advise every employer in Northern Ireland? And to those people who say that you're fearful of upsetting Sinn Féin, put them right. So here's the clear question to our police force this morning. Does it prejudice your investigation? Does it interfere, as Sinn Féin claims, with your investigation if any employer in this country tells a future employer that person is not working for us anymore because they're being investigated for child sex offences? Now, legal and safeguarding experts have spoken up. They have said what Conor Murphy is publicly saying is not the case. There are fresh questions in this story for Michelle O'Neill, our First Minister. She told a Stormont committee yesterday she was not aware of Michael McMonagall's whereabouts after his suspension from the party. Look at the Belfast Telegraph this morning. Look at the Irish News this morning. Watch Nolan Live on the BBC iPlayer that was broadcast on BBC One last night. There is a photograph that was taken at an event in Stormont. And at that event, Michelle O'Neill is just yards away from Michael McMonagall. Now, Michelle is saying that she didn't spot him. One of her special advisors was standing right beside her. John Loughran. Did John not spot Michael McMonagall either? Did he not happen to say to Michelle, "There's McMonagall"? What's he doing here? This was a guy that was suspended for being a suspected child abuser. So there are lots and lots of questions around this. Now, at the committee in Stormont yesterday, Michelle O'Neill said she was horrified to find out that her party, through two former press officers, Sean McGeer and Kieran McGinley, had actually issued references for McMonagall. First Minister Michelle O'Neill defended her party's decision at this committee meeting yesterday and hit out at the British Heart Foundation.
I'm very confident that whenever we were aware of what we knew in terms of the fact there was a criminal investigation underway, that then became an issue for the police and justice system to deal with. And I was confident that that was the case. So there are, I think, lessons to be learned for a lot of people here in terms of due diligence of an employer who takes on an employee, for example. And I think everybody needs to learn those lessons.
So everybody needs to learn lessons, but no mention of Sinn Féin needing to learn any lesson. The questions that remain unanswered. When did our First Minister know that Michael McMonagall was being investigated for allegations of serious sex crimes against children? Newspapers have submitted that question. The Nolan Show has submitted that question. Michelle O'Neill spoke about this at Stormont yesterday.
No, I did not know anything about Michael McMonagall's whereabouts or employment. And I attended an event here in this building, like many of you would have attended the event, because of the support for the campaign. And I engaged with the family on that day, not with anybody who may have been with the British Heart Foundation.
Engaged with the family. And she did. Michelle O'Neill did stand close to this family. They had nothing to do with this, knew nothing, and was engaging with that family. It was little Dahi. But just yards away stood a person suspected of child sex offences. And it is currently the position of Sinn Féin that they could not have alerted the British Heart Foundation as to who was working for them. Sinn Féin adamant that they didn't want McMonagall anywhere near them once they found out what he was being investigated for. Adamant that he had gone from the party. And yet they don't think it was their responsibility to say to anyone within the British Heart Foundation, "Do you know what's going on with him?" Adamant. I spoke last night on Nolan Live to the Belfast Telegraph's Sam McBride. Sinn Féin's position is once a police investigation had started, they legally could not do anything about it. Here's Sam McBride's reaction.
It just doesn't make any sense, Stephen. I mean, if you go right back to the start here, what Sinn Féin told us was that as soon as they were told that this man had been arrested, that police were investigating him as a possible paedophile at that point, that they did the right thing. They suspended him. And that, to me and to most people, I think, sounded like they'd acted appropriately. And what we now learn is that that was not even half of the story. They wanted rid of him. They wanted him off their hands. And they effectively palmed him off to somebody else. they gave references. They're denying that that was authorised by the party leadership, but it was given at such a senior level. Sean McGeer is not an inconsequential figure. People don't know his name. People don't recognise his face. He's more powerful than nearly any Sinn Féin MLA in Stormont. He is the person who writes lots of what comes out of their mouths. That's how powerful this man was. He was speaking on behalf of the party. He's authorised, was authorised to speak on behalf of the party. He is their spokesperson, or rather was their spokesperson for 10 odd years. That's who we're dealing with here. This was at the very top level in Stormont.
Now, the references to Sean McGeer, why is Sean McGeer being mentioned in this? Sean McGeer was one of the two press officers. The other one, Keelan McGinley, who actually issued references, sent them to the British Heart Foundation, despite knowing that McMonagall was being investigated for a whole raft of child sex abuse allegations. The journalist, Maria Cahill, was speaking about this. We'll hear from Maria in a moment or two. The former senior PSNI officer, John Burrows, is questioning, as are lawyers, as are charities who represent victims of child sex abuse, John questioning how it would have prejudiced a police investigation if Sinn Féin had told the British Heart Foundation about allegations against McMonagall.
So it's palpable nonsense to suggest that one employer giving factual information to another employer prejudices a court case, which hadn't yet been charged, or in any way interferes with the police investigation. That is just wrong. Employers engage with each other on a confidential basis. They do so with strict rules, and they do so with a factual form of words to enable that employer to make a decision about employment suitability. And the entire system in the UK and Ireland, unless you're talking about the jobs that require special vetting, relies upon accurate factual references. And Sinn Féin, instead of either refusing to give a reference or giving a factual reference that said this person was suspended, actually gave a misleading reference and said there was no issues. And as a result, this man was employed. It's a failure by Sinn Féin, which they need to own. And it would not have in any way prejudiced a police investigation had they had a confidential conversation with the employer.
We go to our police force, the PSNI, and we say to them, would it have prejudiced a police investigation? They won't tell you. The journalist Maria Cahill, herself a victim of sex abuse, gave us this reaction on BBC One last night.
There's nobody here actually saying that references shouldn't be given for anyone accused of these particular type of offences. Everybody has the right to work. The difficulty here is that certain information was left off a reference or not included, and that crucially then would have allowed the British Heart Foundation to decide whether to employ that individual or not. And I think in terms of fairness to the individual, that it's probably important to say that. But the information wasn't there and they employed him, and that the result of that was that he was in close proximity to a child, albeit along with other people, in the heart of the building, which is the heart of government. You could not make it up. You really couldn't. So, you know, again, in the interest of child protection, I think there's nothing to stop Sinn Féin coming out and answering any of the questions being put to them.
You are a victim of child abuse. How do you think the victims who are in our community will be feeling looking at this?
Well, you know, I can only go by conversations which I have had with victims. I think people are distressed by this. I know myself. I mean, it's had a knock-on effect on my life this week. It's inconsequential, really, when you think about the, you know, the wider picture in relation to this. But I also think that there's another point here, because this is not the only case that the Sinn Féin Party have had the answer on, where someone then followed and actually came into contact with children. We all know about the Liam Adams case. Liam Adams was convicted. We know that certain members of Sinn Féin knew that there was a suspicion around that man. He went on to work in youth clubs. We know in my case, albeit the man was found not guilty, he was then profiled after the first IRA investigation took place into him, because he worked for an organisation where he's quoted as saying domestic abuse victims came for help. Horrific. We know in the case of Seamus Marley, convicted of the abuse of two boys in County Louth, that certain Sinn Féin party members knew about that, didn't pass that information on. Seamus Marley went on to work with autistic children. So there's three cases, and here's the fourth one in the public domain that the Sinn Féin party have had a connection with in relation to some of their members, what knowledge they had or say they didn't have around those issues and what access those people have. And that's why this is such a hot potato now for the party, because at any point in time, robust policies and procedures are supposed to ensure that things like this don't happen. And we need to find out why, and they need to put their hands up and say, this is why it didn't work, and here's what we're going to implement to make sure that this never ever happens again.
Mick Fieldy is the editor of Sligo Tool. Our number this morning, 030 30 80 55 55. I was saying, Mick, it's top of our news agenda on the Nolan Show this morning. It's front page of the Irish News. It's front page of the Belfast Telegraph today. Does Sinn Féin not get it that we have further questions for them?
I think the problem for Sinn Féin is, as Maria's just outlined in that excerpt that you've just played, is if this was the first time round, I think they would get a certain degree of sympathetic hearing, that these things can catch you unaware, that maybe conversations weren't had, or that maybe they just didn't have a policy, right? Now, the problem is that both the Northern and the Southern leadership, because this was investigated and discussed at length in Dáil Éireann on several occasions before, there were reassurances made that as a result of the previous crises, that Sinn Féin had put in place robust policies, that cases like the Liam Adams case or the Maria Cahill case could no longer happen because, if you like, they'd sort of put a rock on the hill to make sure that it couldn't fall down any further. Now, I think this time round, fourth case, I think the onus now is on the party. The rest of us cannot give them a bye ball on this, or even imagine.
Mick, the police won't even front up to tell us if they agree or disagree that it would prejudice a police investigation for a former employer to inform a future employer. And look, let's just call that out. The elephant in the room there is the police clearly do not want to comment on a story where Sinn Féin is being asked awkward questions. So let's just call that out. Because it is 100% in the public interest, and I am looking at that senior management team in the PSNI right now. Yeah. And they know it's in the public interest to tell us whether it would prejudice a police investigation or not. And they won't tell the public.
Look, Stephen, that's a baby elephant. The bigger elephant is the fact that this is the fourth time this has happened on Sinn Féin's watch. Now, you make a fair point, but I think your audience can take some reassurance from some of the expert opinions that you've had on the show this morning, or played on the show this morning, and from the show last night, that what Cara Murphy is telling the public is arrant nonsense. There's a whole piece here about child protection that does not involve the criminal justice system, doesn't even have to involve the police, isn't about evidence, but is about sharing intelligence. And the only intelligence that the British Heart Foundation got from Sinn Féin, so far as they were concerned, was two very senior people writing a reference for this guy in full knowledge that he had been arrested by the PSNI on suspicion. Now, there's an old saw from old soldiers, and I got it from an old Scottish ex-soldier who had been at Monte Cassino during the war, and he had spent some time as a sniper. And he said, look, you basically get two shots. If you take a third shot at the enemy, they can figure out, they can triangulate exactly where you are, and then you're toast. So what's happened here is this is the fourth occasion that something like this has happened on Sinn Féin's watch. And that is the massive element in the room. They don't want to talk about it. And even when put on the spot, Michelle O'Neill is suggesting that she had no awareness from that event on the 14th of February last year that this guy was standing just, and you can see from the photographs, he was standing just 10 feet in front of her, clearly there as a representative of the British Heart Foundation. It's long past time that Sinn Féin take some responsibility for this. And we don't need senior police officers. to come and tell us what the law is. Because as I say, I think the expert opinions that you've had on the programme prove that point beyond any reasonable doubt, that there was no constraint on Sinn Féin. And if they do have a policy, as they have previously claimed in the Dáil and elsewhere, let's see what that policy is. Let's see whether they were consistent with that policy in the way that this was carried out. And if they can't produce that policy, then I think, as Maria says, they need to move as quickly as possible away from lecturing the rest of us about violence against girls and start cleaning up their own domestic stables first.
It is also, look, and I absolutely 100% respect the mandate that Sinn Féin has as the biggest political party in Northern Ireland. In fact, that is why the questions we are asking of Sinn Féin around the direction that they are giving the public about passing on information when there is suspected child abuse is so important. What Conor Murphy says is important. What Sinn Féin say is important. Now, they are telling the public that it would be legally prejudicial to tip off an employer that someone has been arrested. Conor Murphy, you have a responsibility, sir, to convey to us, on behalf of all of the potential victims who could be protected, how is it prejudicial? How? So prejudicial means that it could affect a court case. There was no court case. There was no jury. There was no judge. How could it be prejudicial? You didn't even need, as was brought up yesterday by one of the safeguarding charities, you didn't even need to tell the British Heart Foundation what the allegations were. You could have simply said to them, your party could have simply said to them, you do know that individual left our organisation because he is under suspicion from the PSNI. And yet, rather than reflecting on all of that, you're criticising Enda McClafferty for asking a question around it, our political editor. You are two now, both Michelle O'Neill and Conor Murphy, have criticised the British Heart Foundation for employing Mick Monaghan, and no reflection from our biggest political party in Northern Ireland, Mick, as to whether they could do anything better to protect victims in the future, potential victims, to stop it happening, to alert people so that they don't get into places of work.
Absolutely. Look, what the problem here is, Sinn Féin has inherited a culture of secrecy. And we've seen just how that can destroy an institution from the inside out in relation to the child sex scandals that have plagued the Catholic Church for most of the last 30 years. And their reluctance to kind of clean up, to keep defending the dignity of the church, has ended up in a complete and utter disaster. You know, lifelong devout Catholics witnessing this going, what on earth, what is this thing that I have devoted my life to? What are they, and who have given me my moral code and my moral guidance, which I have lived by as faithfully as I possibly can? Like, it is a destroyer of faith in an institution. Now, eventually, the Catholic Church did what had to be done, and certainly the Church in Ireland basically brought in someone who was who could have oversight over the conduct of the Catholic Church, who was not himself a member of the Church. And that, in a way, is the it was the only way they could get some kind of handle on their authority, their moral authority, and get back onto their basic mission. Now, the problem with Sinn Féin is it's at the very early stages of this, and it is making all the same mistakes that the Catholic Church did in relation to exactly the same issue. Secrecy is really what you do in the short term. It's a tactical move, but in the longer term, this is going to have to come out into the public domain. They're going to have to expose the whole issue to the sunlight of publicity. And without that, I don't really see how they get straight on this one.
This is an issue that's not just being talked about here in Northern Ireland. In the Republic of Ireland yesterday, the Taoiseach was speaking about this.
What we're reading and we're learning in real time is deeply disturbing. Deeply disturbing. The idea that any individual under investigation for sexual crimes against children would find themselves working in another organisation that has contact with children without that organisation being aware is deeply concerning.
And obviously Sinn Féin have a lot of time here in Northern Ireland before there is a future election, Mick. We go to the polls soon in the Republic of Ireland, and will Sinn Féin be worried now that the Taoiseach is talking in the Republic of Ireland about this?
Well, it's not just the Taoiseach. There were two Fine Gael TDs, I think Colin Brophy and Kieran Cannon yesterday, who tried to make interventions on the Kincole speaker, the Doyle, and asked that time be set aside to discuss this very subject. Now, they were slapped down immediately because it's budget week down there, and the whole of the schedule for this week, at least, is set aside to look at that financial measures. But it's coming. And it's so this story is already going to extend into next week. If they thought they could manage it and get it out of the road, I think, or if they, as they often do, use partition to kind of keep a northern story in Northern Ireland and keep it out of the Republic, I'm afraid that ship is sailed. So this is going to continue. How long it continues for, to some extent, is really down to Sinn Féin. How honest and how open they want to be about the reality of the policies that they've had in place. I mean, the very conduct of these senior officers, and, you know, Sam told you last night, you know, one of them has been the senior operator at the press office for most of the last 10 years.
That's Sean McGeer.
Sean McGeer, former editor of the North Belfast News. You know, this will just go on as long as Sinn Féin really keep refusing to come clean on all of this. You know, the idea and the problem for all of these short-term fixes is that they don't last very long because they're not really based on any kind of openness, any sharing of internal information with the public so that the public can have faith in everything they say. Even to the point now where the First Minister has been caught, as I say, in that photograph from the 14th of February last year with a guy 10 feet in front of her.
Well, she claims she didn't see him.
Well, her special advisor, John Loughran, was looking straight at him according to the photograph. I mean, I know it's a bit of a spot the ball competition, but honestly, these are people who know each other intimately. How did she not spot them? And if she didn't spot them, what's going on there? You know, we're kind of almost edging into Sinn Féin RHI territory about the competence of the most senior. The most senior politician in the whole of Northern Ireland here, you know. So either, well, I don't understand. I don't understand how you would not see someone that you had spent a long time working with, albeit he was Derry based, not necessarily always in Belfast, but still a senior member of the press team. How you wouldn't see him when he's standing right in front of you, just 10 feet away, in a not very crowded space.
Look, this for all of us listening to this morning, and I think this is the third, maybe fourth day in a row now that the Nolan Show has covered this story. And some of you are questioning whether we're obsessed with it, whether we have an agenda. And look, it is a political story. But let me tell you what this is, much bigger than a political story. You've heard us challenging Sinn Féin. You've heard us challenging the PSNI. Here's what this story is. There's going to be a child that a paedophile is going to try to abuse in Northern Ireland. And that wrecks children's lives. And it wrecks families. And it wrecks everything. It's abhorrent. What this story is what can each of us do to the very best of our ability to stop that happening? That's what this story is. This story is about stopping child abuse if we can. So therefore, that is why the police are being challenged when they're ducking and diving and refusing to address a simple question: does it prejudice a police investigation? So come on to the PSNI this morning. For goodness sake, just be clear with your safeguarding message around that simple question, because there's a child out there that may or may not be abused if someone does or does not pass information on. So it's as simple as that. To Michelle O'Neill, our First Minister this morning, this is not about Sinn Féin answering or not answering questions. This is about what you, as one of the most influential people in Northern Ireland, can do with clear messaging around stopping child abuse in terms of us passing on information. To our minister, Conor Murphy. Conor, this is about you helping all of us and us helping you stopping children being abused. So what's prejudicial about us passing as an employer information on to the next employer? Now, they are a smart political party, Mick. They're a party which excels on messaging to the public.
Yeah, but the message, and I think message is right. You mentioned that in your earlier in what you just said there, Stephen. What messages are we sending? What are we prepared to say, for the sake of political expedience? And here, the party is making exactly the same mistake that the Catholic Church made. And, you know, and those callers who may be genuinely saying, look, back off, you're just obsessed with this, that, and the other. They're missing the woods for the trees. The Catholic Church claimed that it wasn't subject to civil law or criminal law, but to canon law. And that stuck for a while, but it doesn't. There can be no exceptions under the law. Sinn Féin do not have a sacred mission that means that they don't, that everyone else is subject to good practice in this area, but they're not somehow. And that's not an excuse that washes well, but also...
Well, Sinn Féin is claiming that their good practice is they hand it over to the police, and Conor Murphy was saying to Enda McClaffrey yesterday, he literally was saying, it's up to the police to inform people about their investigation. It's not our job to do it. That's what Conor Murphy was saying.
Some of your listeners who are sympathetic to Sinn Féin will also have employment in large corporate organisations, be it public or private. This is not how things operate. There are things like employment tribunal, which are set up to make sure that employees that are poorly served by their employers have some kind of redress. But it also means that employers have rights in terms of whether they suspend or sack someone. And at that point, very often, you are simply not allowed as an employee to recommend anyone who has left your organisation under a cloud. That is how that's how good practice in employment operates. You're not necessarily allowed to go... sorry, go on.
I'll just start bringing our callers in this morning. 030-30-80-55-55. Michael's first in Newton Abbey. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Stephen.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Stephen, God help us if Sinn Féin get into power north and south. I mean... You know, we see repeated examples of this. Sinn Féin want all the power, but they want none of the responsibility. I think yourself and Nick mentioned the word responsibility there a few times. Like, you know, they want all the controls of Stormont and the Dáil, but they don't want the accountability. And we see this repeatedly, Stephen. You know, we see countless, like, sort of Sinn Féin members on, like, X and Twitter that they have blocked half the population north and south. With the Mary Lou McDonald talking about no veto for certain members of the public in terms of the issues that's going on in the Republic. They don't want to face scrutiny, everybody, they point the finger at everybody else, but they can't seem to look in the mirror, Stephen.
I mentioned also, Michael, on BBC One last night, it is the stated position of Sinn Féin around this, that it was because there was a police investigation which meant that it was legally perilous for them to speak about this to the British Heart Foundation. And what we did on BBC One last night, we reminded people when there was a police investigation into, no, completely different because he was innocent, he was released without charge. But when Gerry Adams was arrested, do you remember Bobby's story up on that platform? Very much shouting from the rooftops, keep your hands off our man. This is while Gerry Adams was inside a police station. Martin McGuinness was doing the same thing, giving public speeches about it. You look at the incident on the Ormond Road around those two police officers, Sinn Féin publicly questioning during a police investigation what was going on. And when it comes to child abuse, they say their hands are tied. Suspected child abuse. They say their hands are tied, Michael.
Well, absolutely, Stephen. Again, it's the wider issue of accountability. It's, you know, and you could highlight a number of different situations from currently and in the past. So it's, you know, point the finger at everybody else, but, you know, don't look in your own closet sort of thing. And I think that's... people should reflect on that wherever they go to the ballot box the next time elections come around.
And Gareth, next morning, Gareth?
Oh, hello, Stephen. I've just asked the question that we would ask of any other organisation. Who is the party manager? Who is the human resource manager? So obviously I looked at their structure and they have a group of seven people who are in the leadership. And I mean, it's not very difficult through process of elimination to work out who would probably be responsible for that, because there's a director for publicity and there's also a general secretary. And then I was reminded also that the general secretary is 68 and is about to retire.
You're talking about all of these conundrums and codes and all of this. It's nothing to do with that, is it? It's to do with the policy of a political party in Northern Ireland.
They have a collective leadership. Are centralised. They have a collective leadership. They do not have a party manager. They do not seem to have a human resources manager, Stephen.
Mick, where does this go from here?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I think what the party will try to do is what they've done before, which is just tough it out and take each successive wave of this story and just rock through it. And if they have to cut bait and let people go, they've already let go of one of the most senior press officer they've got, then they'll do that. They are ruthless, and you know, look, there is an internal belief, and you give a very good example of it when you talk about the story diatribe. When Adams was arrested, "How dare you touch our leader?" That was his exact words. That is exactly the same.
How is that not prejudicial?
Sorry?
If you take Conor Murphy's reluctance to speak to anything about around which there is a police investigation, if Sinn Féin are hands off as soon as there's a police investigation, how is it consistent?
Well, it isn't consistent. That's the truth. And the point I was going to go on and make is that is the exact same. That's analogous to the Catholic Church saying we're only subject to canon law, so you can take your civil and your criminal law and stuff it up your whatever. So it is an expression of contempt for the principle of equality under the law. It applies to other people, but it does not apply to us. Now,
not fair, because the whole basis on which Sinn Féin are arguing their position is that it was with the police, therefore they were content with letting the judicial process continue. That's why they weren't getting involved anymore, because they were putting so much store, Mick, in the judicial process.
Let them produce the evidence that that's true. I was really commenting on the Bobby story thing as an expression of contempt for civil and criminal law and due process as far as police investigations were concerned.
Okay.
So I just mean it in that particular context, that was an expression of contempt for a code of law that applies to almost everybody else. But, and this is where the analogy with, I think, the Catholic Church and the critical mistakes that it made in handling child sex abuse were, that came back to haunt them. So in the short term, I think they'll use the tactical game, to come back to your question. They'll try and push this one as far down the road as they possibly can. But each time they do it, they're accumulating more damage. As I say, the old sniper's rule is only take two shots. This is the fourth shot now. We see exactly where the problem is, because it has arisen four times in the last 15, 16 years. And it's really, the excuses, I think, are running very dry.
Sean's next. Morning, Sean.
Morning. How are you?
Go ahead, Sean. Thanks for calling.
What's your programme last night? I think the basis of all of this, what everybody is saying, is that it's about protecting children.
Correct.
So what I could gather last night then was that it's the whole basis of protecting these children is from one employer to another employer. If I was employing people in them today and they were going to have access to children, as much as I would get a reference from a previous employer, surely it's down to me to make sure that the highest checks are carried out for that person to have access to children.
Well, you're talking about what's called in Northern Ireland the Access NI checks. And what they do is they establish whether anyone has been charged or indeed convicted of child sexual offences.
Or pending.
No, I don't think they do.
I don't think those checks do. Then we should be looking at, because if someone has been charged, arrested, brought in and questioned, asked their...
Someone's been arrested, it would not appear on an Access NI check. Mm-hmm. And look, this is why, Sean...
Here's the grey area for me. We're saying then that the police don't have to say to an employer who's asked for an Access NI that this person has actually been arrested, charged and convicted of child abuse. But the PSNI can't say that this person has been arrested on allegations of child abuse. But we're saying then that we have to rely on a previous employer to say we've suspended that person for... because they have been arrested.
Sean, there are so many different aspects to this story that, you know, one of them being some of what you're bringing up this morning, which is why we're devoting so much time to it. So, for example, Access NI checks. I think there is a fair question around why don't arrests at least appear on those checks. Now, a possible answer for that is there's a much lower threshold for arrest than there is for charge. Yep. Let's remember that people will be accused of all different sorts of allegations, and some of them will be totally innocent. So we've got to have in mind that person that's been wrongly accused because of an agenda, because of a political agenda, because of all of that. So we've got to have that in our minds this morning. You're really criticising the British Heart Foundation.
Well, no, I'm criticising the way it stands. If I was going to employ people, you see, if we're saying that people employed anywhere have access to children, surely the law must state, if someone has been arrested, if you or I was arrested tomorrow morning and with allegations of child abuse, and then I was on to then apply for a job, it shouldn't be down to the safety of those children on a previous reference from a previous employer. Surely the police or whoever's going to employ you has to do due diligence and say,
no,
this person shouldn't have access to children.
No.
There's the grey area. And if we're going to criticise Sinn Féin because they says we couldn't say we suspended this person, regardless Sinn Féin didn't give, as what I could gather, the go-ahead for references. Two people give references, and the British Heart Foundation accepted those references from people and says, this man's good to employ. But then whenever we see photographs of him carrying a banner beside We Die about a campaign for donorship, you know, then we're saying, how does this person get a job with the British Heart Foundation? And it's Sinn Féin's fault and not society's fault, i.e. the law.
Okay. So let's walk through some of that, right? So, first of all, the British Heart Foundation, it is their position that with the job that McMonagall was applying for, that job, in other words, as a press officer, it did not meet the threshold for which they would then apply for Access NI checks, right? Because it wasn't a job that the job itself entailed regular interaction with children. Secondly, with the British Heart Foundation, they are going to the biggest political party in Northern Ireland seeking references, not from one person, but from two people. Should they have checked some?
You can check with Joe Bloggs and Joe Bloggs for a reference.
But here's the score. But here's the score, Sean. If the PSNI this morning are so reluctant to give out public messaging around this story, what do the British Heart Foundation? What do they actually say? What further questions do they ask? Even like, what do they do? This is why there's so much confusion.
One again, in terms of employment law, I would be saying is if you've advertised a job for someone just to do media, and then all of a sudden you turn and say, "Here, we have an event today. You can go ahead and tie that banner, and you're close or in the vicinity of Kildare." Then surely there's somewhere then. This check hasn't been done for all these people that are in the vicinity of Kildare.
Sean, thank you. Richard's next. Morning, Richard.
Morning.
I wonder would the British Heart Foundation show us, because they, I wonder would they show us their standard form, so they don't have to. We're not asking them, because I doubt they would release it, and there might be data protection issues around it. The actual references that Sean McGeer and Keelan McGinley provided. But I wonder, would the British Heart Foundation simply show us their template form? What do they ask to be filled in? What did McMonagall say? What did McGeer say? What did McKinley say? Was it, I heard it being asked and avoided yesterday in one of those committees, was it on headed Sinn Féin paper? Were the references sent on headed Sinn Féin paper? All of those questions unanswered. Our First Minister, how did she not spot McMonagall a few yards away? Like the bread and butter kind of, you know, elephant in the room question is, everybody's asking that question, Michelle. How did you not spot McMonagall? Did your special advisor not spot him either? Did no one in Sinn Féin, a party which is embedded throughout this country, anything moves, you know about it. Did nobody in Sinn Féin know McMonagall was in Stormont that day? Is that the position of our biggest political party in Northern Ireland? Richard in Belfast. Morning, Richard. And by the way, Richard, see before you speak, are you hearing a relative silence from many of the other political parties? No, they've made little comments, haven't they? Some of them have made comments.
They've all got to work together, haven't they?
Well, they're not working. So the DUP asked questions yesterday in the committee. I've seen Matthew O'Toole calling out questions around this photograph. Doug Beattie was on this programme, so I guess they have spoken out, right? Many of them have. Okay. Go ahead, Richard.
Two people who are asking the reference must talk to each other.
Richard, we can't hear you because we can't hear you. Because of your signal, we'll see if we can get it sorted. The TUV, I guess I got to retract what I just said because I'm now going through every political party who have been speaking about this. The TUV's Timothy Gaston at the committee yesterday asked a further question about the event which McMonagall attended in 2023.
First Minister, you have said that you didn't see him at the event. Going by the photographs that have come to or have been published today, can the junior minister Riley say the same, and can you detail what your interaction was with Michael McMonagall on that day?
I'll take the question. I mean, I think I've already dealt with the question.
To be fair,
horrified that anybody would give a reference in this scenario. Had they have asked my permission, it would not have happened. And I think that I've set out clearly earlier just in terms of the rest of it. So if there are any questions in relation to the Executive Office, very happy to check them.
Just before we go off that, can I ask, have you checked to see if the references that were provided were done so on Sinn Féin headed paper?
I have confirmed very clearly that I did not give any okay to any references being given. I would not have seen them, given that I did not even know they existed until it came to my attention last week.
Did you ask for a couple of them?
You said you're only one question. Move on, please. Thank you.
So, Michelle, you said you would take the question and then you didn't answer it all, did you? You were asked by Timothy Gasson if it was on head of Sinn Féin paper. You moved your answer away from answering that question. A question was asked about one of your other ministers. You said you would take the question and then you didn't answer it. We'll try Richard again. Go ahead, Richard.
Can you hear me now?
I can. Go ahead.
The two men who were asked to make the reference must have talked to each other and decided and talked about, do we put this piece of information in or do we not put it in? And they must have come to the decision, we will not put it in. Why did they believe it was in Sinn Féin's best interest not to have that information disclosed to the Belfast Heart Foundation?
Well, let's deal with that. Maybe because, and I don't know, maybe because, let's remind ourselves that at that point, let's be as fair as possible to Sean McGeer and Kieran McGinley. At that point, Mick Monagle was claiming to be innocent. At that point, he was innocent because there's a presumption of innocence in this country. And there is a fair question, Richard, when someone is under suspicion and the police are investigating, so they haven't been charged, there's not enough information at that point to charge anybody. Sean McGeer and Kieran McGinley might have been absolutely adamant that that presumption of innocence means you continue to be able to work.
They are not allowed to put an incomplete reference in that they know will give the Belfast Heart Foundation the wrong information about this person. It will be an incomplete reference. And you're not allowed to do that. If you decide to make a reference, you do it. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You don't pick and choose what you put in.
Well, they're out of their jobs now because...
Yes. And he was suspended. Conor Murphy said, so we terminated our contact with him. He was suspended, so he was at home. Full pay, half pay, no pay, we don't know. But he was still an employee.
Mick, if he was a press officer, which he was, Mick Monagle was a press officer, who was paying his wages? Sinn Féin?
Yeah, it would have been, yeah. He's a party official. As far as I understand it, I mean, yes, there are departmental press officers, but as far as I understand it, the only people who are party officials who get paid by the state are the special advisors. And some of those might have press responsibility, but by and large, the press office is a function of the political party.
I'm hearing this morning on my phone, so the text has come in literally 10 seconds ago, someone at the heart of politics here, saying, why did the Alliance chair close down Brian Kingston and Timothy Gasson from follow-up questions? Well, look, you know, the chair has a job to do to get through the order of the day, but does there need to be further scrutiny of this at Stormont? I don't know. Tom and Finnegy, morning, Tom.
Hiya.
Go ahead, Tom.
I'm on the treadmill, so if you want to join me, come on ahead.
You're on the treadmill?
Anyway, just one simple question that I'm amazed hasn't been asked. I've sat on a lot of panels and I've dealt with a lot of employment people. Why did the British Heart Foundation not simply ask this guy why he left his previous employment? That's a standard question.
Well, maybe they did, and they were given a different answer. I don't know, but this is why I'm wondering whether the British Heart Foundation should be, given the fact that they're now being criticised by the First Minister and Conor Murphy, another minister, the Economy Minister. Should the British Heart Foundation release at least their draft, their draft forms as to what they ask? Is this going to be raised? Is this matter? If we're talking about the potential for children to be sexually abused, here's my final question. Is this going to be raised, Mick, in the Assembly for debate? Are the police going to come out and give us clearer information?
There's almost certainly going to be a debate in the Dáil. It would be very strange if there's a debate in the Dáil and there's not one tabled in the Assembly. This is what the Assembly's for. In terms of the criticism of the Chair, I think it was legit. But, as you pointed out, the First Minister did not answer the question. I think that is poor chair.
Okay. Mick, we're going to have to leave it there.
Thank you, Mick.
We'll leave it there. Here's the 10 o'clock news. Good morning, everyone. 4 minutes past 10, 0 30 30 80 55 55 is the number to call. We'll talk about the A5 in just a moment or two. We'll talk about Derry Airport in a moment or two as well. First of all, Peter, on our top story. Morning, Peter.
Morning. That day that the Heart Foundation were going up to Stormont, they obviously arranged the event with the office of the First Minister, Deputy First Minister.
Well, we don't know that.
So they just landed at Stormont?
Well, here's what we do know. I'm just trying to be, you know, I need to be as careful as possible here in terms of Peter reporting what we definitely know. And then
Giving you a question, you know, I'm giving you a question to ask them.
Sure, fair enough. Go ahead.
Okay, so was this a prearranged meeting? Was this arranged via email, via phone call? Was this arranged by McMonagall himself via email or letter or phone call? You know, it's not, you know, there's obviously secretarial positions at Stormont who take these meetings. If it was prearranged, you know, could McMonagall's name have been on emails, paperwork, knowing that he was coming? Was there a list of the delegation that was coming?
Well, look, here's what we do know. I think some of your questions are good. And thank you for calling us. So what we do know is McMonagall, now remember the British Heart Foundation were, that's the point of the story, they were completely in the dark. They did not know McMonagall was being investigated for suspected paedophilia. But we do know that McMonagall at that stage was the press officer for the British Heart Foundation. So there is a logic in what you're saying. Was it McMonagall that made the call? Did he make the call to who would he have made the call to? Because Stormont wasn't up and running then. This event was actually to campaign for the recall of Stormont. Sorry, it was a recall to discuss the organ donation bill. So, Peter, your question is relevant. Are you still there?
Yep, still here, yeah.
Your question is relevant. Who from the British Heart Foundation phoned? Who received the phone call? If Michelle O'Neill is then attending that event, was it anyone within Sinn Féin who received the call? Did they receive a call from McMonagall?
Yeah, McMonagall himself, yeah.
And we've asked this question of Sinn Féin, and they've ducked it. We said to Sinn Féin, did any other Sinn Féin staff who were at Stormont for the Assembly recall know Michael McMonagall was there?
I think it's about time the British Heart Foundation sort of spoke up a wee bit about this, you know, actually involved with it, you know. It's doing them damage being in the press every day too, you know.
Well, they have released a statement. In that statement they say that they followed due process, they did do checks, they did do everything according to the policies that they have when they are checking out staff. So that's what they say they did, Peter. But I don't think anybody wants to be in the middle of this story, because talking about child sex abuse, and at the end of the day, the perpetrator, Michael McMonagall, the perpetrator of the crimes, he's ultimately responsible, isn't he, for the complete mess that this is. But it's about stopping someone becoming a victim.
Yeah, that's it. And it's all on his emails too, you know, all any communications that's was taking place, you know, it's all on his emails. They have it.
Okay. Listen, thank you. Okay. Look, that's an hour and 10 minutes on it. We'll come back to it again and again and again. If there are more questions to ask, that we can promise you. Now, next, the Stormont executive could take over the cost of running the City of Derry Airport from ratepayers. The Economy Minister, Conor Murphy, said his department intended to assume responsibility for annual running costs of around £3.45 million. The airport is owned by Derry City and Strabane District Council, which has previously raised concerns over future funding. Is it worth it? Is it good value for money? Financial journalist Paul Gosling with us today. Morning, Paul.
Good morning, Stephen.
And the businessman Frank Shivers. Good morning, Frank.
Morning, Stephen. Morning,
Paul. Well, is it worth it, Paul?
Yes, it is, because Derry remains the weakest economy in Northern Ireland. And in order to get investment and to support the businesses that exist within Derry, you need to have connectivity. I'll give you an example. I had coffee a few days ago with the managing director of a newly established business that's getting a large amount of investment from investors in continental Europe, and they are extremely supportive because in part of the airport, and they want to put additional money beyond that initial project into the city and its economy because of the airport. If we were reliant on Belfast International, then basically people wouldn't come that far because it's still an hour and a half basically down the road.
And yet there are many people who drive from Derry to Belfast City Airport or indeed the International Airport because there are much more regular flights, aren't there?
Absolutely. I fly quite regularly. I'm in Dublin Airport right at this moment because I'm flying to the US, and obviously you can't fly to the US from anywhere in Northern Ireland. But I fly quite often from City of Derry over to either Liverpool or Manchester because my daughter is at university in Manchester, and a lot of the people that are flying out of City of Derry are doing similarly. We've got a large student population from Derry that are in both Manchester and Liverpool, and that's one of the main routes. The other main route is to London. There are several flights a day, but they are very expensive. And really, the airport isn't there particularly to support the tourism sector. It is to an extent, but it's more especially there to support business connectivity and to promote additional investment.
I know there's much more, you know, there are many more arguments, Paul, not just money. But that airport has run at a loss for decades. It is costing ratepayers £3 million a year. On average, there are four daily flights. Compare that to most other airports.
Absolutely. I understand that point completely. And maybe it's not going to be there permanently. This current arrangement is for a 5-year period. I'll give you a personal example, Stephen, which is that I would not have moved to Derry if there had not been an airport there. My ex-wife is German, and one of the criteria from where we moved to from England was there had to be an airport and there had to be a university. So I cannot be unique in that. Investors will not be investing in Derry if they do not have easy connectivity to other places. And Derry is at the end of the road. The A6 is partly improved now. The A5, as we all know, is a long way still, several years from being upgraded. And basically, if we want Derry to be economically successful, it has to have the infrastructure to support that. And at this moment in time, the airport is central to that.
Frank?
I agree wholeheartedly with Paul. Connectivity is very, very important to the business community and that sort of investment in any of the regions. I do question quite heavily whether this is a good use of public funding. And indeed, as a public or as a private business person, whether it's fair on Belfast City Airport and Belfast International that ratepayers money, both those airports are privately run, privately operated, that public funding is given to a competitor. Is that fair, Stephen?
Paul, is it fair?
Well, in terms of fairness, I don't think we should simply look at Derry on its own. Derry is the capital of a broader region, which is why the Irish government needs to provide financial support to it, as well as the Northern Ireland Executive. If you didn't have City of Derry Airport, there would be a very big chunk of the island of Ireland that did not have air connectivity. So I think there will be
negotiations. I mean, what the Department of the Economy has said is basically that it will leave the brokerage negotiations for future funding. I don't think that it's that department on its own is going to be funding it. The council will continue to be putting money into it, and I expect the Irish and British governments will do so as well. But we do need to make changes to the way City of Derry Airport is run, in particular by improving public transport linkage into it. So certainly I think as things go forward, we need to look at how to cut the financial support and how to make it more efficient. But it's at this moment in time, it is absolutely essential for the local economy.
Paul, the stats indicate, you know, last year the passenger numbers were 154,000. That's two-thirds down from a height of 438,000 in 2008. The stats would say that people don't want to use it. And I would argue, from a connectivity and an inward investment agenda, that looking, and you've put the point, you're sitting in Dublin Airport, which we do as well, when we have to go to the States or further afield, that money would be better used for investment in Derry on providing or subsidising an American or US flight in Northern Ireland, rather than wasting it on quite blatantly an airport that people don't really want to use.
Well, United Airlines pulled out of Belfast International Airport. I mean, there's always changes to routes. And Ryanair dropped some of its routes coming out of City of Derry, which is why the passenger numbers fell. I would expect them to rise again. But I think we have to recognise that this is not particularly a service for local people to go on holiday. It is about getting more investment into the City of Derry itself and across the border into Donegal. And that's why, as things stand, with a weak economy still, both in Derry and in Donegal, is absolutely an essential piece of local infrastructure.
But Paul, with the greatest respect, you know, if a businessman from Birmingham is coming into Derry, they're not planning it round when the flights are. There's only two a week from Birmingham. So if you come from Birmingham into Derry, you know, you're not going to say, oh, let me check the flights. There's only two a week. Rather than coming in on Wednesday, the flight's not till Thursday. So, you know, they're going to fly into the international. You also got to look at, and you're quite right, United Airlines pulled out because of lack of passenger numbers. So potentially there is a subsidy issue there that could be argued.
It's the timing of this, isn't it? That there is more of a laser focus from the public when they are being told that the pensioners are losing their winter fuel payments, when they are being told that the budget coming up here from the Labour administration on the 30th of October is going to be painful. Kiva Archibald today, I think it is. Is there going to be an announcement from the Department of Finance today, possibly around revenue raising in Northern Ireland? So when you start talking about government handing out money, obviously the public, their ears are pricked.
This is absolutely true, Stephen, but it doesn't take very many investors to actually recoup a lot of the money in terms of local economy. If you look at the figures for Invest Northern Ireland, they recognise in those statistics that they put out that very few potential investors reach Derry. They basically stop in Belfast and Antrim, maybe Tenerife as well, because they don't come as far because it's so difficult to get here. That is why it's so important that we have the opportunities for potential investors to fly directly in, which is what's happening at this moment in time with people from continental Europe that are putting large amounts of money into a new investment project in Derry, and which is likely would not be happening without the airport being open.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Paul, thank you. Frank, thank you. 03030 80 55 55 is the number to call this morning. Just to remind you, with regards to our top story today around questions remaining for Sinn Féin and the PSNI around the public messaging for safeguarding children from child sex abuse protecting children in the future. If you want to watch Nolan live, we did a lot on this last night on BBC One. That programme is available on the BBC iPlayer. And if you just search Nolan Live, you will find it there. Now, next, the long-awaited A5 road upgrade project has been approved by Stormont. Total cost, £1.2 billion. £500 million of that coming from the Irish government. The Infrastructure Minister, John O'Dowd, said that work on the project would begin in early 2025 and would be completed on a phased basis. Kate Corrigan's son, Nathan, died in December 2021 in a crash on the A5. Hello to you, Kit.
Morning, Stephen.
What did this decision mean to you, Kit?
Well, it was very welcomed, Stephen, and I suppose all families would feel it's bittersweet. We've been waiting for this announcement for a long time now, and I suppose I've been active in the campaign for it to be upgraded from Nathan Hagdaig in December 21, but I know there's been lots of work previous years to that by campaigners and MLAs. So, yeah, it was. We were delighted to hear that it is eventually going to come about, but however, bittersweet.
Can you tell me about that road and why it is so dangerous, Kate?
Well, Stephen, it's mainly a single carriageway, and there's just very few passing bays. There's very little three lanes where people can overtake, and it just carries a huge amount of diverse vehicles on it on a daily basis. There's haulage vehicles, there's rural engineering, there's emergency services, there's TransLink, school buses, local access, businesses and homes with direct access onto the A5. So it really is just not fit for purpose, which I know has been said on many occasions.
Yeah.
But whenever you live alongside it and you witness that every single day, you realise, yeah, the upgrade is very much needed.
Can you tell me the circumstances around your son losing his life?
Well, yeah, he went out. It was Boxing Night, December 2021. And he was just over in a local pub with his friends, just socialising as you when you're 20 years of age. And unfortunately, the car that he was travelling home in collided with the HGV just up at the junction that where was Kelly's Inn at the time, is now Calvin's. And he lost his life along with two of his friends, Peggy McNamee and Peter Finnegan. So, yeah, that was the change in our life.
How did you find out?
Of the accident that morning.
Yeah.
My sister had sent me just a screenshot of the police notification of the road being closed. And we literally live 100 yards from where the accident took place. And I hadn't heard any news or hadn't seen any social media coverage or anything. I just knew that Nathan hadn't come home. But I didn't really pass much remarks, to be honest, because he wouldn't have normally come home too early on a boxing night. But so she sent me the notice, and then I just messaged Nathan like 7 in the morning and got no reply. And then, well, just felt like literally seconds from I messaged him that the police were at our front door. And that was whenever we were first notified, just literally with the TV ads, the first doorbell ring, the knock on the door. So that's how we found out.
And you open the door, and when you see police officers there?
Yeah, well, we have like a glass front in our front door. So I had literally come into the living room and switched on the Christmas tree, was glowing up in the living room and the lights on outside and that. And heard the doorbell just went to the door, and I could see the fluorescent uniform through the glass. And it was just horrific, Stephen. I just opened the door and I heard them say, "Are you Mrs. Corrigan?" And I just went to pieces. I just felt like my heart had just been completely ripped out of me. And I just pleaded with them to tell me that he wasn't dead. I was hoping then, beyond hope, that they were just there to inform us that he was injured or something. But no, and unfortunately, that wasn't the news that we had to hear.
How do you process that, not in that moment, but in the days, the weeks, the months?
Gosh, it's hard to even put into words, Stephen. You're in such a head-spinning place from that moment. We had spent quite a while up at the scene of the accident. So it was maybe early afternoon whenever we had returned down home here, and family and close friends and neighbours started to congregate to sympathise with us and to support us and to really carry us along. And I think that continued. due to the Christmas period and COVID restrictions, do you think it wasn't released home by the coroner or whatever until the Thursday? So the accident took place in the early hours of Monday, so it was the Thursday whenever he was eventually home. So all of that week, you're just carried along by people calling, people wishing you well. Our local parish priest is very supportive. The other priest who was at the scene with me also called. Everybody is just rallied around us, and they really carry you because you're not fit to do anything really yourself. You're living in a very surreal existence, knowing that this is now our life path, but not wanting it, and knowing that you can do nothing about it. And then I suppose as time goes on, well, I mean, I have been open about it. I go for therapy. I've been for counselling.
Does it work?
Oh, it does. Well, it works for me. It helps me. I would have been very active before Nathan's accident. I'd have been out running and going to the gym and doing lots of things like that. So I had to rebuild myself back up again. And it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of effort every day to do the things that you know that keeps you well. But yeah, counselling, therapy, talking about Nathan, keeping his memory alive, all helps. And I suppose being part of the campaign for the A5 has helped as well, because it has given us as a family a voice and a platform to remember Nathan. But also you want to speak up because you want the road to change. You want it to be made safer.
Should it have taken this long for them to make a decision?
Oh, no, it should definitely not have taken this long. It was first announced, I think, in 2007. What's that, 17 years now? But I know due to the financial challenges and legal challenges, it has never been able to go ahead until now.
I was asking you about, you know, the accident, not to be prurient or intrusive. But there's something in my mind of we've got to be careful in the interim period here that mm-hmm. it will take this road quite a long time, now that the decision's been made, to actually be upgraded. The minister is saying that it'll be completed on a phased basis. And I'm just mm-hmm. mindful that we should be doing everything we can to communicate to people so that there are not more deaths on that road in the interim.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. We sort of campaigned here for the Givaha area in the interim period, and we have increased lighting and increased signage and things like that. So there are interim safety measures that can be done until the upgrade is finally, you know,
so what up is and running. What is the biggest safety message? I'm not as familiar with that road. Is it don't overtake? Is it drive at a certain speed? Or what's the fundamental that we can protect lives in the interim here?
I think speed is a major factor, and people being inattentive, possibly on their phones, and taking chances. You know, just be patient. If you're stuck behind a rural vehicle, it will eventually pull in and let people pass and things like that. So, yeah, just be more vigilant when you're driving and cut down your speed. And it's better to arrive alive than arrive dead. And nobody wants that. We don't want any more road deaths. We want the number to be decreased. So I would say, yeah, just everybody watch their speed and be more vigilant.
You said to me, Kate, you want to keep your son's memory alive. So mm-hmm. finally, what are your memories?
Well, Nathan was just full of life, full of character. He kept our house going. Very sociable young lad, hardworking welder. And I just have memories of him bounding through the house, up and down the stairs, in and out of the living room, the kitchen, just as a normal 20-year-old would be. And just all of those fun memories of him laughing, slagging me in the house about something, giving out about something. Just a normal 20-year-old lad, just about to embark, you know, in the next phase of his life. And so, yeah, we just keep his memory alive. We have photographs. We talk about him. We mention him. So, yeah, just all of those ways that I'm sure all families keep their loved ones' memory alive.
Thank you for talking to us today, Kate. I'm sorry for your loss, and I'm glad that that you feel that this is positive and the widening of that road will ultimately save further lives. So thank you for speaking to us this morning. That's Kate Corrigan. Her son Nathan died in 2021 in a crash on the A5. That's about it from us for today. To remind you, as the story continues, about questions regarding how we safeguard our children from suspected child sex abusers, Nolan Life is on the BBC iPlayer, which you can watch right now. If you want to contact us about that story, nolan@bbc.co.uk. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for your company. Bye-bye.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan. Stephen Nolan Show.